They can take me down. Who gives a f***? I don't really care. I never care. Baseball, and they want to take me down, go right ahead. Take it. Take all the shit you want. You got this half of people that hate you.
Plenty of booze.
And then you have this other half that roots for you. I'm not, why should I let them down?
That was Barry Bonds back in 2006 as he dared threaten baseball's most sacred milestone, Hank Aaron's career home run record, a record that would have been the crowning achievement for any Hall of Famer. But while Barry Bonds is many things, like arguably the greatest player of all time, he is not a Hall of Famer. Still. So today, ahead of the E60 documentary debuting this Sunday, Jeremy Schapp explains how and why Bonds remains on the outside looking in, and what that says about the rest of us. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Friday, November 5th. This is ESPN Daily. Jeremy Schapp, look, we know that there has been no hitter like Barry Bonds, right? Like, we know this. This is established fact. 73 home runs, the single season record, 762 career home runs. Like, it doesn't look like anybody's going to touch those anytime soon. Why are we taking a look back at his career right now?
Because this is his last year on the writer's ballot. This is the last time the writers get a chance to select Barry Bonds or reject Barry Bonds for the Hall of Fame. So the way the process works is you play your career out in Major League Baseball, and then 5 years after you play your final game, you become eligible for the first time on the writer's ballot. Now, it used to be that you spent 15 years on the writer's ballot and you had to maintain a certain percentage each year to stay on the ballot. I think it was 5%. They've actually reduced the amount of time that you stay on the ballot. And some say this is specifically to keep people from the steroids era like Bonds out of the Hall of Fame. So now it's 10 years, and soon we'll know whether he has achieved the necessary 75% threshold for enshrinement.
I mean, Jeremy, it does behoove us to step back here for a second, just acknowledge the guy who is the greatest offensive player of all time. He's not in the Hall of Fame, man. This is a paradox unlike any other.
No, I mean, you could very well make the case that Barry Bonds is the greatest baseball player who has ever lived. And when you talk to people who were in baseball during the Bonds era, let's call it that, he came up in 1986. His last season was the 2007 season. Almost everyone says Barry Bonds is the greatest player of his era. He's the greatest player they saw. The numbers don't lie. The numbers are eye-popping, mind-boggling, but he's not in the Hall of Fame because, quite simply, he is associated with steroids. And associated is almost a euphemistic way of putting it. Barry Bonds testified under oath that he used steroids. He says he had been told that what he was taking were not steroids. Many people have testified otherwise, that he did know. But the fact is that Barry Bonds did testify under oath that he used steroids. And so no one who doesn't vote for him for the Hall of Fame says that his numbers are not Hall of Fame worthy. They're more than Hall of Fame worthy. They make him, as we've said, arguably the greatest player of all time. It's all about the steroids issue.
So, Jeremy, this is where we try to be as fair to Barry Bonds as we can, because what he did during the alleged steroid usage is well documented at this point numerically. What he was before, when he was with the Pittsburgh Pirates, I want the kids out there to recognize exactly how good he was.
Well, Barry Bonds, it's an interesting career arc, Pablo. Okay, so he comes up in 1986, and, you know, he's famous before he gets to the big leagues.
Barry was picked by Pittsburgh and has reported to Bradenton. He's known baseball all his life.
He is the son of an outstanding major league player, Bobby Bonds.
Ever since Barry was about, I guess, 2 years old, he always had a baseball bat in his hand. You could see that he was going to be a ball player.
A guy who had this very rare combination of power and speed, all these talents.
Bobby Bonds became only the second player in baseball history to join the 300 club. 300 stolen bases and now 300 home runs.
Barry Bonds, you know, comes to the major leagues in 1986 with high expectations, and he comes in and over the first 4 years of his career in Pittsburgh, which is a franchise that has really struggled in the half decade before he gets there, he's a good player. He finishes sixth in the Rookie of the Year balloting in 1986, but he's not great by any means. I was looking at the numbers, you know, Willie Mays, Hank Aaron, Mickey Mantle, Bobby Bonds. They were all better players in their first 4 years than Barry Bonds was. Barry Bonds' age 26 season is 1990, and that's when he takes off.
Barry Bonds is just having a remarkable year.
That's better than his daddy used to do.
It's a little bit later than average for one of the game's all-time greats, but when he takes off, he takes off. And he's spectacular in 1990. He is the National League MVP. He leads the Pirates to the postseason for the first time in 11 years. And Barry doesn't hit very well. The next year, he's great again. He's the runner-up for the MVP award to Terry Pendleton. And they reach the playoffs again. He struggles in the playoffs again. The next year, the Pirates are back and Bonds has a season that results in his second MVP award in 3 years. So now he's won 2 and 3 seasons, runner-up the other year, and suddenly, you know, you kind of look around the game and you say, Barry Bonds is the best player in the game. He could do everything. And he did it.
Yeah.
He did everything magnificently, except throw. He did not have a great arm. But he compensated for it, and he was such a great outfielder anyway that he won all those Gold Glove awards. He had all those outfield assists. But that's the weakest part of his game. Everything else is an A+. Hitting, command of the strike zone, speed, base running, catching the ball, getting to the ball. He's this force of nature in baseball. He's that good.
Jeremy, you look at film of Barry Bonds from this era, the early 90s. He is fast. He's young. He's visibly lighter. You know, in many senses, he's a future Hall of Famer just based on what he's doing in Pittsburgh at that trajectory.
No doubt.
But you mentioned that the Pirates are a team that had been struggling organizationally themselves. How was Bonds feeling about his place in Pittsburgh as all of this was happening?
Everybody knew that he wasn't going to re-sign with Pittsburgh. I mean, he had hoped that they would sign him to a contract, a long-term contract, before he became a free agent, you know, which they had done with other players.
You can pay me now, or you can let me go now and let someone else pay me and let somebody else appreciate what I do.
And he resented that they didn't do that because he was the best player in the game. But they went to arbitration instead every year. Management submits a figure, the player submits a figure, the arbitrator has to choose one figure or the other. And Bonds loses. And so now he's not only bitter that he hasn't gotten the long-term deal that would have assured his long-term financial stability. He's upset that he's lost the arbitration.
They're not sending Jim Leland to arbitration. You know, that's how I look at it. He got an extension right away. I mean, there was no problems. You're going to be our man. They're not doing that with us.
A lot of that spills over in spring training in 1991 after he loses that arbitration case. And there's a famous clip of him and Jim Leland, his manager, confronting each other at spring training in 1991.
Barry had some issues with his contract and he was a little bit bitter. So something was kind of building up. I just snapped and Barry snapped.
You don't want to be here, get your off and quit.
But by the time he is eligible for free agency after his seventh major league season, after the 1992 season, it's clear to everyone that he's out of there.
So after years of grievance with the Pirates, and also, I guess, the media, Jeremy. I want to bring them into this equation, too, at this point, because as Bonds is a free agent, it also seems like he is also warring with the people who cover him.
It's an interesting element of Barry Bonds' career, this relationship with the media, or lack thereof.
That's the media writing on a piece of paper, telling the people who read a newspaper what is going on that really do not know.
He's described by the people who were covering him at the time as someone who was mercurial. They didn't know whether, you know, one day he was going to be really friendly and interested, or he was going to entirely ignore them. And it wasn't just the media. You know, Barry had difficult relationships with his teammates sometimes. You know, there were fights in the clubhouse with other players. There were disagreements over the years. Pretty much everybody said the same thing, and that was Barry didn't care what you thought of him.
Do you care what people think about you?
No, not really.
And he certainly went out of his way, you could argue at times, to convey that message. And one of the classic examples is he wins his first MVP award in 1990. And there's a big gala in New York, the New York Baseball Writers Dinner. And they invite all of the award winners in both leagues every year. You know, the managers, the rookies of the year, the Cy Young Award winners, the MVPs.
It's part of the social circuit that you get to enjoy when you are atop the sport.
And everybody, you know, at least in my memory, you know, and what people say is you show up.
Sure.
You know, it's just like one of those things. Barry Bonds didn't show up. And Jim Leland tells us the story.
I talked to Barry, and Barry said, I'm not going to that. And I said, Barry, you need to go to that. He did not go.
He just didn't see the value of nurturing those relationships with the media. You know, why? You know, who knows why? But I think people who knew Bobby Bonds said that he had difficult relationships with the media over the years. And it's interesting. One of the writers who's interviewed, one of the Hall of Fame voters who's in our piece, is Terrence Moore, the longtime national columnist. And he knows Barry pretty well and has covered him for decades. And he said 5 years ago, he was talking to Barry about his career and everything. And Barry's sitting with him at the time. I think he might be a hitting coach at that point, that year that he was a hitting coach for Florida.
I started asking him pointed questions such as, Barry, you know, I've known you forever. And I've always seen you as being pretty much a nice guy, at least to me. I said, why did you act the way you acted back then in all those years? And he flat out said, I was a dumb. I was floored.
I wish I hadn't been such a dumb in terms of the way that he dealt with other people, teammates, the media, coaches, managers, etc.
Well, because Jeremy, look, it's one thing to be to the people you work with and to have the reputation, and therefore you are disliked because of it.
Right,
it's
another. That's me.
Yeah, no, that's the Jeremy Schapp story. That we know this. We know how that one goes.
Right.
You can survive that, but what you can't necessarily ever fix are the relationships that result in you not being immortalized in the way that you clearly have been wanting to be.
But you know, at the same time, As bad as that relationship was, right? Who votes for the MVP award every year? It's the baseball writers. Who's the only guy to win 4 MVP awards? Who's the only guy to win 5 MVP awards? Who's the only guy to win 6 MVP awards? Who's the only guy to win 7 MVP awards? So, you know, you had to acknowledge his greatness, whether or not, you know, you liked him or hated him or couldn't stand the sight of him.
Well, let's get to San Francisco, Jeremy, because Barry Bonds is his free agent. He is the prize of the offseason when he leaves the Pirates. He signs the richest contract in Major League Baseball history.
Good news for Giant fans. Baseball's richest contract handed out. National League most valuable player, Barry Bonds, agreed to a 6-year contract with the Giants worth in excess of $43 million.
To return home, basically. His de facto home in San Francisco with the Giants. How would you describe that homecoming that he received, that they arranged for him, really?
It was huge. Giants. He grew up in the Giants clubhouse with his godfather, Willie Mays, with his father, Bobby Bonds. He's a Bay Area guy. It's where he always wanted to be. It's where he felt most comfortable. And this was a franchise that needed him, needed a superstar, needed the best player in the game. And they got him.
That one's high, deep right field. This has a chance. God, home run, Barry Bonds. First at bat before the new hometown fans.
And he's wearing number 25, his father's number. His father becomes the hitting coach. Dusty Baker, who's been with the Giants at that point for years, is their hitting coach. He becomes the manager. The Baker and Bonds families go back three generations. Dusty Baker's father was Bobby Bonds' little league youth coach. So this is, in many ways, the ideal situation. This is a level of comfort immediately that he never experienced in Pittsburgh.
All right, Jeremy, coming up, how the summer that saved baseball changed Barry Bonds forever.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with the smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky. 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
So from 1990 to 1998, thereabouts, Jeremy, Barry Bonds is objectively, there is no argument here. He is the best player in baseball. He has won three MVP awards, 8 gold gloves. He is the founding and only member of the 400 homers, 400 stolen base club. This is a guy who will have his place on Mount Olympus in Cooperstown whenever he wants it. But then 1998, that does seem to be the turning point. What happens then?
Well, in 1998, Pablo, as you remember, because you're not that young, we get the Mark McGwire, Sammy Sosa home run chase. Two of them going at it. Over the course of that summer,
it is a home run, number 61.
Number 62, home run. He's done it again.
They just keep it up.
Magnificent. 70 home runs. Take a ride on that for history.
And it becomes a huge story beyond baseball, a really big cultural moment that transcends baseball. The race to break Roger Maris's single season home run record of 61. And the focus is on McGwire and Sosa every day. And Barry Bonds, as you said, is the best player in baseball. Although by 1998, people were kind of forgetting that he was the best player in baseball. The focus, the spotlight has left Barry Bonds a little bit by the time we get to 98. And then in 98, it entirely shifts away from him. And he has another great year. He's always great. He hits 37 home runs. I think he finishes in the top 5 for the MVP balloting again, or top 10. And yet he's looking around and he's saying, whoa, somebody hit 33 home runs more than I hit? You don't have to be a rocket scientist to figure out, of course, what was going on in baseball.
So McGwire and Sosa, they are these national, global sensations. They are credited with saving the game of baseball after the strike in 94 as well. But of course, Jeremy, what happens next is that Barry Bonds shows up to spring training in 99, in his mid-30s, and he looks different. The way he appeared, the way his body had changed, the way he performed at that age when normal human bodies are eroding, they're falling apart. What was the reaction like at that point, Jeremy?
You know, there was a lot of naivete, right? among those, including me, who were covering the game at that point. You know, yes. It wasn't immediately assumed like, oh, he's bigger, he must be doing this. I'm sure there were many people who did. I don't remember what I thought. I wasn't around him at that time, but it was like, boy, he got big. Maybe it's just Andro. Who knows who was saying that? But you couldn't miss the physical transformation that was taking place. We'd have to wait a little while to see how much his game had transformed, but physically it was apparent, and it would become more apparent, that Barry Bonds had decided at this age that he was going to show up with a different kind of body that he'd ever had before.
So this is now almost 20 years ago, Jeremy. That's how old we are now. But over the next five seasons, after dealing with some injuries in 99, this is when he transcends space and time, right? This is when he breaks Mark McGwire's single season home run record. This is when he wins four straight MVPs. What do you even compare Barry Bonds to over that stretch of time?
Look, there is no comparison, right? I mean, I'm a baseball stats geek, but like I never thought anybody would ever come close to the 847 and 846 slugging percentages that Babe Ruth put up in 1920 and 1921. They were basically 100 points higher maybe than anybody else had ever had. Barry Bonds slugs 863 in 2001. He hit 73 home runs.
Bonds hits it. Deep to right field. Way back. Is this the one? There's a new record holder. A single season mark.
Next year, he bats 370. We're talking about 68 intentional walks. In 2004, okay, that's the year that he's turning 40, the season in which he turns 40. He has a 609 on base percentage.
It's no, Jeremy.
He walks more than 200 times. The things he was doing were far more extraordinary and unlikely than what Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa did in 1998.
So as Barry Bonds is breaking records and he's doing it under a shadow that did not dampen the enthusiasm for McGwire and Sosa. Let's be clear about that too. Bonds is doing this as there is increased skepticism, Jeremy. How would you characterize the changing attitudes around performance-enhancing drugs in sports and in baseball specifically in American culture at this time?
Everybody's over the McGwire-Sosa home run chase hangover, and that feel-good story has started to sour or entirely soured like four-month-old milk. Now the blinders are off, right? And so when Barry Bonds is doing these things in 01, 02, 03, 04, there is a skepticism and there is a cynicism about it, which, by the way, turned out to be justified. And by the way, some of this is happening as he is in the middle of this enormous steroids investigation that's going on out in the Bay Area Laboratory Cooperative, Balco, Victor Conti, all that stuff. He's right in the middle of this. So he's doing these things while he is under this cloud of suspicion. And so it's being processed in a different way, but it's still absolutely mind-boggling what he's doing.
So this is where the media, I mean, where we become a character, Jeremy. As Bonds is being called to testify about his relationship with Victor Conti, his nutritionist, Greg Anderson, his trainer, as he's now in the center of this congressional probe and the San Francisco Chronicle is reporting on grand jury testimony, the media, we're here for all of this.
No doubt about it. Bonds testifies in December of 2003. I think it's 365 days later that the San Francisco Chronicle breaks the story. Huge news with Bonds' grand jury testimony in which he says that he did use these substances, the cream and the clear, that were designer steroids created by Balco. He did use them, but he was told that they were flaxseed oil and a balm for arthritis. And I mean, I remember having these discussions, you know, on our shows on ESPN. What does it mean? How do we now assess Barry Bonds? All that stuff, as everyone was in sports, because You know, he's not just now in possession of the single season home run record. He is homing in on the all-time home run record. And the media confronts him the first time they have a chance, 2-3 months later at spring training 2005, and it's an extraordinary moment.
Why do you think so much scrutiny comes from the fact that you're about to pass Babe Ruth?
Babe Ruth is one of the greatest baseball players ever, and Babe Ruth ain't black either. I'm black. Black, we go through a little bit more. That's the truth.
He says that as a black player in the game, being covered by largely white media, he is not being given the same benefit of the doubt that others were given. He basically says, without saying it in these words, you guys know what was going on in the game.
All you guys lied. All of y'all. Should you have asterisks behind your name? When your closet's clean, then come clean somebody else's, but clean yours first.
I think there's a subtext too. You guys know, where was the reporting? Where was the reporting on McGuire and Sammy Sosa? You know, where was the reporting when all of these other players were doing it before? This is again, you know, the thought bubble in my mind, before I made the decision to do it, because baseball institutionally, and that's the writers, that's the game, that's the Players Association, that's everybody decided, we're just going to enjoy the ride with steroids. But now I'm the target? Well, isn't it interesting?
And so Barry Bonds breaks Hank Aaron, beloved Hank Aaron's record, his career home run record in 2007.
And Bonds hits one high. Hits it deep. It is out of here. 756. Bonds stands alone.
There is respect, begrudging respect, out of the sense of, wow, he is unstoppable. He is a truly unstoppable force. But then there is the fact that the designer, Mark Echo, Jeremy, he buys the baseball, the record-setting baseball. He has it stamped with an asterisk, right? Metaphor made literal.
Yeah.
And he donates it to the Hall of Fame.
And there is no literal asterisk, right? The record book, he is the all-time home run king. He is the single-season home run king. But yeah, I just went to visit the ball in Cooperstown a few weeks ago. And yeah, you know, the leather is carved out in the shape of an asterisk. And, you know, we can say that there are no official asterisks in baseball, but they're there. They exist.
Barry Bonds' career basically ended there, right? I mean, what happened after he hits this home run?
Well, after he hits the home run, he hits a few more home runs. He ends up at 762, and the 2007 season ends. And by the way, he's 43 years old at this point, and he's still phenomenal. The advanced numbers, the things he did at that age, it's incredible, but nobody wanted him. He does not get re-signed by the Giants. Nobody else wants him. He doesn't retire. He still wants to play. He's like, look what I can still do. But he is basically, at that point, you know, persona non grata in baseball. And he doesn't officially retire until a couple of years later when it's clear that he's not coming back. But I'm not so sure that if you gave Barry Bonds a bat today and put him at home plate that he wouldn't...
Seriously.
He wouldn't get a walk or a home run.
So the question, Jeremy, is then how a game that turns such a blind eye to steroids can hold them against the most feared hitter who ever lived. After the break.
Delicious meat, nutritious. In the snack that packs a real protein punch, Wonderful Pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Trust me, I've been eating them like there's no tomorrow all week. Wonderful Pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with your family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you, like me, are on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries, whatever it may be. Well, the good news is Not only are wonderful pistachios a complete protein providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snack game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
So, Jeremy, you said at the very top here that this is the final year that Barry Bonds is eligible to be voted into the Hall of Fame by the baseball writers. So I just want to understand here how this actually all works. Like, what does the actual math look like with respect to Bonds actually getting elected?
Well, there were 401 Hall of Fame voters last year, and we think they're going to be within 2 or 3 of that figure this year. And then, so basically, you got to get 300. Last year, Barry Bonds got 248 votes. So Bonds was 52 or 53 shy, still a big margin shy of the required threshold. The question is, this year, knowing it's his last chance, will the writers, and they get to vote for up to 10 players each year, will there be an additional 50 votes or so for Barry Bonds that were not there last year? You would say to yourself, well, what could have possibly changed? And we should be clear, you know, if he doesn't get in now, it doesn't mean that he's never going to be in the Hall of Fame. But it means that his candidacy would be considered at some point by one of the veterans committees. But this is always the first best option to get in.
Well, and look, I'm pulling up the Hall of Fame website on my computer here, and it's staggering just the degree to which this place is not merely, I mean, it's not a museum, so to speak. It's also a place that casts moral judgments, Jeremy.
That's right.
And that way, there is this element of it as a church. And so I'll read to you from the website, the famous clause. Voting shall be based upon the player's record, playing ability, integrity, sportsmanship, character, and contributions to the teams on which the player played. Therein lies, it seems, the obstacle that Barry Bonds has been unable to surmount.
Exactly. And they call it the character clause. And, you know, here's the interesting thing, right? In the entire history of the game, Pablo, before the steroids era, there are only 2 players who have been excluded from the Hall of Fame because they don't measure up with the character clause. 2 players ever. All right. That's Joe Jackson and Pete Rose. Mm. And here's the interesting thing, too, about that. Neither of them is eligible for the Hall of Fame. They're both on the ineligible list. So it's not as if the writers ever had a chance to vote for them anyway. The character clause talks about sportsmanship, integrity, all these things, but nobody has ever applied them critically except to steroids users and people suspected of using steroids. And you know, a fair question to be asked is, well, why is this different than other forms of cheating? You know, what does character mean, right?
Yes.
You know, we have racists in the Hall of Fame. We have people who worked very hard to keep African-American players out of Major League Baseball for decades. They're in the Hall of Fame. They pass the character test, but the people associated with steroids don't. So, you know, when you say character clause, as I did in numerous interviews over the course of the last couple of months to people inside baseball, some laugh. Most laugh or scoff or chuckle because it has been applied so sparingly and inconsistently through baseball's history. But now, in this era, when there are players whose numbers would otherwise put them in the Hall of Fame, suddenly the character clause has been invoked.
It does seem, Jeremy, like the most mortal sin you can commit in baseball is against the game itself, right? That's the logic here about why Bonds is this special case. But I wonder then, why is it
that— But even that, Pablo, I would take exception to only in the sense that, right, we're talking about it now. It's like, here is this red line, right, this steroids line, but where do we draw it? And for a long time, there was steroids use in the game, rampant steroids use in the game. There was no testing. It was officially against the rules. It was countenanced, if not outright encouraged. And baseball, you know, has, you know, has a lot to answer for institutionally for the era, right?
Yes.
And yet, you know, this is the one red line that has been drawn by the writers. Again, Joe Jackson and Pete Rose, they are literally the only two players who have been excluded from the Hall of Fame because of the character clause before this issue. But it's not really the character clause because they were never eligible for the writers to vote upon.
So I get, Jeremy, how Pete Rose and Shoeless Joe Jackson are precluded from the deliberations that Bonds has been undergoing for years and years now because of their involvement with gambling in specific.
Correct.
But with Bonds and steroids, like, where does that red line get drawn? Because without naming names here, there are guys already in the Hall of Fame who have had heavy, heavy suspicion around them.
Yeah. That's what's so problematic here, right? And this is something that we heard over and over again from people who vote for the Hall of Fame, Pablo, is that, so how are we supposed to judge this, right? How are we supposed to say, all right, you know, we're not going to put Barry Bonds in the Hall of Fame, if not the greatest player ever, you know, one of the top five greatest players of all time, but we're going to put in these other guys who, you know, didn't have to testify before a grand jury. You know, whose test results weren't leaked to the New York Times. It's an impossible line, I think, to draw, and yet we're asking the writers, and a lot of them resent it. They don't want to be put in this position, and many have actually given up their vote because they don't know how to deal with this, and they're not getting any direction on it from the Hall of Fame or from Major League Baseball. It's kind of been left up to them. How are we going to figure this out? You know, Sammy Sosa falls into the category, right?
Yep.
He's never admitted taking steroids. He's one of those players that these suspicions are attached to, and he didn't come close to being in the Hall of Fame. Barry Bonds is a different category, you could argue, because like Alex Rodriguez, who's up for election for the first time this year, and Mark McGwire, who's already off the ballot, he admitted it. Now, again, what he admitted under oath in grand jury testimony was that he took these substances, but he didn't know they were steroids. Unlike Rodriguez and McGwire, who have both, you know, said that they knew they were taking steroids. You know, Roger Clemens is very much in some of the same categories as Bonds as an all-time great. Seven Cy Young Awards, Bonds has seven MVP awards. Their last games were both in 2007. Their voting over the last 9 years has really been almost even. I think last year Bonds got one more vote than Clemens, 248 to 247. And Clemens hasn't admitted knowingly or unknowingly taking steroids. But obviously there is a lot of smoke around Roger Clemens. So the point is, it's very complicated. It's a hard line to draw. And that's why we've seen, I think, the voting reflect some of these complexities. You know, it started at 36% 9 years ago. Barry Bonds got 36% of the vote. Last year, he was up all the way to 62%, which is still, as we said, far short of what is required for selection.
So, Jeremy, with this deadline looming now, do you think that Barry Bonds will be elected? Will he be welcomed into the Church of Baseball? Will he be inducted into the Hall of Fame and find his place on Mount Olympus?
No, I don't think so. You know, the numbers have gone up incrementally year over year for the last 9 years. There's no reason to believe that there's going to be a leap from 61.8% to 75% this year. And I don't see that many minds having been changed in the last year. You know, there hasn't been any new evidence. There hasn't been anybody else who's gotten in. We say, well, you put him in, now you got to put in Barry. I don't know what would have changed for 52 people to make a different decision this year than they made last year. But who knows? One of the people, as I said, one of the voters we spoke to was Terrence Moore. And he said, I voted no for Barry 9 years.
I have not voted for Barry Bonds to be in the Hall of Fame as of yet. The previous 9 years, I voted against it. And I can honestly say, I don't know what I'm going to do.
With that deadline in front of them, staring them in the face, all the writers, now you have to, you know, you have to drill down and come up with your final answer. But if you're asking me, if I were a betting man, which you know I'm not, No, I don't think he gets there.
And if that's how it's going to go, Jeremy, what does that say about us? What does that say about we, the media, if that is the ultimate resolution of this?
So it's a fair question, right? Is Barry Bonds not going to get elected because he had this one kind of relationship with the media? And others are going to get in because they had a different kind of relationship, because they came around at a different time in the steroid story, because they didn't do things that were as spectacular as the things that he did. And so there's no question of, you know, defiling the record book. It raises questions too about, you know, the media being involved in these big questions in the first place. And, you know, we know writers who've given up the vote because this process is too complicated now, taking into consideration everything that happened in the steroids era. Tim Kirchin said something like, "This is the hardest thing I do, deciding whether or not to vote for Barry Bonds." The question is, how can anyone be expected to make consistent decisions with the lack of data, with the lack of transparency, which is partially baseball's fault? You know, Andy Vance likes a guy who summed it up to me also. He's like, you know, baseball didn't do anything about this for years. Didn't do anything about it for years. Mm-hmm. You know, there was no testing. There was no punishment. And now they come along and they say, yeah, we didn't test. We benefited from it. Baseball came back because of the home runs, et cetera, et cetera. But no, no, you can't be in the Hall of Fame. I mean, come on. And that's a pretty good argument.
Jeremy Schapp, ESPN Daily, first ballot Hall of Famer. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, sir.
You can catch Jeremy Schapp's new E60 documentary, Bonds, this Sunday at 9:30 p.m. Eastern. On ESPN. I'm Pablo Torre, and this has been ESPN Daily. Our show is produced by Alexander Hyacinth, Mike Johns, Steve Martin, Ryan Nantel, Mike Philbrick, Andy Tennant, Eve Tro, Chris Tuminello, and Aaron Vale. Special thanks this week to Garrett Lang, Andres Soto, Christian Gardner, Julia Faust, and Jackson Ugelo. I'll talk to you Monday.